Good afternoon. This is Stephanie with the Herald and Review, dated Friday, October 13th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Public Works Director to Retire. Marley has spent a decade improving city's infrastructure. Rick Marley has a simple trick for living he likes to impart on people. A life hack in today's parlance. Do those big events on memorable days so you can remember the anniversary. He married his wife Peg on New Year's Day, and now Marley, 67, will be retiring from his post as the city's public works director on October 16th, the same day as her birthday. In his 10.5-year tenure working for Decatur, Marley oversaw a surge in public infrastructure projects at a time when city officials looked toward reinvesting in aspects of the city that had languished, the sewer system, and perhaps a bit more romantic and visible, the downtown streetscape. Certainly it has improved the attitudes of people who work downtown, who have businesses downtown, and now there are more people who live downtown, and we expect to see that trend grow into the future, Marley said. The Public Works Department handles the major engineering and maintenance needs for the city's infrastructure. That includes snow and ice removal, parking, and paving streets owned by the city, sewers and drainage systems, and city-owned trees. Together it amounts to an operations budget north of $10 million a year, with a staff of 72. Marley's current salary is $136,247. The city posted an opening for the job weeks ago, though internal staff have served as interim directors in the past if city officials need more time to conduct their search. City Manager Tim Gleason said he often went to Marley for important advice on the various big-ticket projects still ongoing, from the dredging of Lake Decatur to local road improvements. It mattered to him that what we did should help people, Gleason said. In Marley's first year with Decatur in 2007, after working 28 years for the Public Works Department in Champaign, he sounded the alarm on a host of neglected infrastructure that everyone without a civil engineering degree takes for granted. A council member asked Marley at a council meeting that year what challenges kept him awake at night the most. It would be the storm sewer system, Marley answered at the time. They were out of sight, out of mind at the time, Marley said. They were the types of problems that resulted in an unacceptable number of basement backups, and the situations where the sewer would back up over the manhole lid and flow into streams and the lake. Those are terrible situations. Recently, the city has committed $70 million to improving the system of pipes that crisscross the city. While residents in some parts of the city never noticed any sewage backups in their homes, the ones that did, and the ones that will with far less frequency in the years to come, have Marley in part to thank. Marley's alarm over the sewer system proved fortuitous when in 2012 the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency turned its attention to Decatur. The federal agency found violations and system-wide deficiencies in the city's sewers, already well known by Marley and his staff. The thing about the work that the EPA wants us to do, it's work that we want to do as good stewards of the community and the environment. The EPA just wants us to do it faster, like right now, Marley said. The EPA initially ordered the city to complete comprehensive system improvements by the end of 2018, something that city officials said was financially untenable. The EPA requirements could have been significantly more stringent and costlier to the taxpayers, were it not for the planning done in advance by Rick and his staff, Gleason said. The fact that we had a plan in place and were working towards its implementation has helped significantly. Over negotiations with Decatur, the EPA extended its deadline for compliance 2 years. Dan Mendenhall, Municipal Services Manager, said he's worked under 5 public works directors in Decatur, and Marley is right at the top, he said. Mendenhall said Marley improved communications between staff, all the way from crew workers to the city management. He'll listen to anyone, from the maintenance service worker, he'll listen to their ideas, all the way up to the top of the city, Mendenhall said. Marley said he and his wife plan to move to either Tallahassee or Gainesville, Florida, both college towns with lots of cultural offerings, and the type of sports Marley said he likes, not SEC football, but Olympic-style events like diving. I hate to see him go as a public works director, but I'm very happy that he's going to retire and enjoy the rest of his life, Mendenhall said. Our next story is headlined, Lighting Candles Inspires Hope. Dove Inc. annual event shines light on domestic violence. As 2 candles were lit during Dove Inc.'s annual candle lighting ceremony Thursday, a sense of sorrow turned to hope as the evening went on. One of the candles burned in honor of Dania Lewis, the 5-month-old Decatur girl who died in March from head injuries prosecutors say were caused by Duan L. Lewis, who was charged with first-degree murder in her death. The other was burned for domestic violence survivors, many of whom were present at First United Methodist Church, 201 West North Street, that night. The theme of this year's candlelighting ceremony was Let Your Heart Beat. For more than 30 years, the ceremony has served as a way for public to mourn those who have suffered and died through domestic violence and celebrate with survivors and everyone who works tirelessly to end the abuse. Terry Ducey, director of the organization's domestic violence program, said the ceremony has traditionally taken place in October as a part of National Domestic Violence Awareness Month. However, she said, the significance of the month doesn't end once November begins. Domestic violence occurs every single day of every month of every year, she said. October is the month that we bring more awareness, but it's actually occurring all the time. To help the men and women who have suffered abuse, the domestic violence program provides them shelter, counseling, and other resources on a year-long basis. Ducey told the crowd of over 100 people that the state's budget crisis may have impaired the program this year, but it hasn't stopped her or her Dove's volunteers from reaching out to those in need. In order for Dove or other agencies to help even more people, Ducey said the community's help is crucial. What we would like is for people to learn about their local domestic violence program and to support it, she said. Everybody is affected. Either their friends or their family members, their coworkers, the church family. If you are aware of domestic violence going on, know where to refer them. As a way to honor those who help and support domestic violence victims, Ducey awarded several individuals with special awards to recognize their efforts. The recipients included current members of the Dove Domestic Violence Program staff, Decatur Police Department officers who respond to domestic violence cases, and former Dove staff member Linda Staff, who also served as the speaker during the ceremony. Susan Wayne, a speaker at the previous candlelighting ceremony, was in the audience with her husband Thursday. Last year, Wayne shared the story of how she broke away from her abuser and, with the help of Dove and her children, eventually reclaimed her life. I really hadn't shared my story a lot before, and then Terry asked me to, she said. Ever since I went through that, I've come to the candlelighting ceremony, and she finally asked me to share it. Over 20 years later, Wayne has continued to rely on the support of her loved ones, Ducey and the Dove staff, to keep her moving forward and far away from the pain that her abuser caused. She hopes the work that Dove and other organizations do will continue to make a positive impact on survivors and instill the same hope in them that it did for her. Don't be afraid. You've got to take that first step, Wayne said. It could save your life. It truly could, and I think it saved mine. There's been so much more to my life since I left, and that's the important part. This story also includes an information box headlined Domestic Violence Statistics. According to the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, on average, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States. During 1 year, this equates to more than 10 million women and men. 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men have been victims of some form of physical violence by an intimate partner within their lifetime. 1 in 4 women and 1 in 7 men have been victims of severe physical violence by an intimate partner in their lifetime. And on a typical day, there are more than 20,000 phone calls placed to domestic violence hotlines nationwide. If you're in danger, Dove offers a 24-hour domestic violence hotline. Call 217-423-2238 to receive help. For more information on Dove Inc. and the services it provides, visit doveinc.org, that's doveinc.org, call 217-428-6616, or email dove@doveinc.org. Next, we'll move inside the paper. Here's a story headlined, Lead Found in School's Water. Argenta Orellana schools send letter to parents informing them of results, and this is datelined Argenta. 4 sinks and 8 drinking fountains in Argenta Orellana school buildings were found to have amounts of lead, the district reported Thursday. Steps are being taken to address the findings. State law requires all schools with students in 5th grade and under, built before 1987, be tested for lead. Schools that have lead of more than 5 parts per billion must notify parents. The actionable level by the Environmental Protection Agency is 15 parts per billion. In the letter to parents, the district said that levels were found to be 1. Above 5 parts per billion from 3 sinks and 3 water fountains at Argenta Orellana Elementary School, with 1 sink having above 15 parts per billion. 2. Above 5 parts per billion from 1 water fountain at Argenta Orellana Middle School, and 3. Above 5 parts per billion from a water fountain at Argenta Orellana High School. The drinking fountains that were contaminated were shut off, and signs were posted by the sinks to inform people not to drink out of them. The plan is to replace the water fountains or install filters on all the water fountains to protect the drinking water, according to the letter from Superintendent Damian Jones. 17 water fountains and 8 sinks were sampled. The General Assembly passed legislation requiring schools to test water starting this year. The move coincided with the water crisis in Flint, Michigan, in which elevated levels of the toxic metal were found in water lines. In May, tests showed elevated lead levels in nearly 100 water samples across the Decatur School District. Sangamon Valley was found to have elevated lead levels in water at elementary schools in Harristown and Iliopolis, the district reported last month. The full Argenta Oriana test results are online and can be viewed, Jones said. They are committed to being transparent in this process. We are going to be extremely proactive, Jones said. Next, we have Decatur Mural Project Brightens City Streets, and this is part of the 100 Reasons to Love the Decatur Area series that the Herald and Review is doing. They chronicle our history and reflect our fun. They are the murals gracing Decatur's buildings, pieces of art on oversized canvases. The Decatur Mural Project was created in 2012. Administered by the Decatur Area Arts Council, it's an effort to beautify highly visible buildings, create a sense of pride, and showcase the works of artists. The first was painted on the west side of the Central Illinois Title Company building at 145 South Water Street during Independence Day weekend 2013. It was designed by Jerry Johnson, executive director of the Arts Council, and shows Commodore Stephen Decatur leading the 1804 raid to burn a ship, the USS Philadelphia, that had been captured by pirates in Tripoli. It features the words bold and daring, which a British admiral used to describe Decatur's actions. The bold and daring not only relates to Stephen Decatur, but those are good words, I think, for Decatur residents to see on a regular basis and think about, Johnson said in 2013. The second work, painted by Johnson and volunteers a year later, is on the west side of the building at 111 East Main Street and features the Decatur Staleys and Chicago Bears football teams, which trace roots to Decatur. The 2016 painting was by Shani Goss and her husband, Tronny Goss, on the east side of 702 El Dorado Street. It depicts the singer Bob Marley. Shani said she chose Marley for his wide appeal and upbeat themes. I wanted to find something that conveyed a positive message and that appealed to the most broad audience, she said. With all the stuff going on right now, something to make people happy. She also designed the mural depicting the late Mayor Mike McElroy near Central Park. In 2017, Ron English painted a whimsical elephant-looking creature on the east side of Ken's Aquarium and Pet Supply at 730 East Cerro Gordo Street, and Eric Weatherford created a helmeted man on the side in the 100 block of South Oakwood Avenue. Also recently painted as part of the project was a geometrical design on a facade in the 200 block of West Main Street. We have a few state and local briefs. This one's from Chicago. Power drops out of governor primary race. Chicago Alderman Amaya Power says he's ending his bid for the Democratic nomination for Illinois governor because he doesn't have enough money. Power, who appeared at a Decatur town hall last week, said in an email to supporters Thursday morning that he doesn't have the resources to mount a successful statewide campaign. He says his only choices are to take on more personal debt or cut staff, both of which he says he won't do. Power entered the race saying he would provide a progressive counterbalance to the governor's agenda. He was among more than a half dozen Democrats running in the March primary for a chance to unseat Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. Power said he wouldn't be endorsing any of the other candidates at this time. From Decatur, we have home hit with 5 bullets. Police said 5 bullets were fired into a Decatur home sometime Tuesday night or early Wednesday. A 59-year-old woman living at the house in the 300 block of East Division Street called in to report the damage. Patrol officers found a bullet hole through the front door with a spent bullet lying on the living room floor, said Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland. He said there were also 2 bullets in the home's siding, a hole shot through one of the support posts of the front porch, and another bullet hole through the front door frame. No one was injured, and police have no suspect information. Also from Decatur, Christmas in October kicks off Saturday. A Christmas in October event this Saturday, October 14th, will raise money to help provide those less fortunate with gifts during the December holiday. The event is 3 p.m. at 1901 North Railroad Avenue. It is hosted by Prairieland Abate, a motorcycle safety awareness charity organization. All proceeds are used to help with the Salvation Army's gift drive. Last year, the group helped the Salvation Army provide toys to more than 3,118 children, it said in a statement. Admission is $10 at the door or a donated new toy of equal value. The event includes food, an auction, a silent auction, raffles, and live music. Bikes will line up at Kroger on US 36 at 1 p.m. with kickstands up at 2 p.m. Then the bikers will ride to the event with a police and fire escort. The next story is headlined, Judge Weighing Sentence in Shooting Case. A judge is now weighing the sentence range a Decatur man accused of murder might face on conviction, anywhere from 20 years to more than 45. Darian L. Evans, 18, appeared in Macon County Circuit Court Thursday. He has so far pleaded not guilty to first-degree murder charges in the shooting death of Decatur woman Cecily Taylor, who was shot to death while being robbed September 7, 2015. Two other Decatur men are also charged with murder, but prosecutors allege it was Evans who was armed and pulled the trigger. Prosecutors have pushed for a sentence of 45 years, served at 100%, but Judge Thomas E. Griffith had expressed doubts about whether that was appropriate after changes in the law on sentencing young offenders. Adults, for example, face an automatic 25-year enhancement on their murder sentences if they kill with a firearm. What Judge Thomas E. Griffith must now decide is whether a longer sentence can be applied to Evans, who was 16 when the murder occurred. Griffith said Thursday he will outline his views at a new hearing November 2nd. Establishing a sentence range is important. It sets the guideline for penalties if convicted in a jury trial, and a low enough range may encourage a defendant to do a plea deal. The issue is up for discussion because the law now dictates juveniles cannot automatically receive extended sentences like adults without courts first considering their life and criminal history, state of mind, and backgrounds. Of the two other 18-year-old defendants charged in the case, Daquan Klein has already pleaded guilty and accepted a 20-year sentence deal, due to be imposed Wednesday. And talks are ongoing with lawyers representing the third defendant, Shaitan L. Cook, Jr. Griffith had left his courtroom Thursday for a 25-minute in-chambers discussion about the case with Evans lawyer Daniel Fultz and assistant Macon County State's attorneys Kate Kurtz and Lindsay Shelton. The idea of the conference was for Griffith to learn more about Evans' background, while his lawyer and the prosecutors also talked over sentence parameters with the judge. Evans had given his permission for the conference after first being warned by Griffith he might not like hearing about it afterwards. If I say something like, I think Mr. Evans ought to get 50 years instead of 20 years, and Mr. Fultz tells you that, it doesn't give you the right to remove me from the case, Griffith said. After the conference was over, Griffith told the court he needed more time to consider what to do, having heard a bunch of facts I had not heard before about Evans. On November 2nd, I will give a greater indication in terms of what the court may do, he added, referring to sentence ranges. The next story is, former Decatur basketball star pleads not guilty to drug charges. A former Decatur High School basketball star is pleading not guilty to possession of more than 70 grams of heroin with intent to sell. The case against Lewis Jackson, 27, came up in Macon County Circuit Court Wednesday for a pretrial hearing. Jackson, free on bond, was represented by his Springfield attorney, Mark Kevin Wyckoff Sr. He told Judge Thomas E. Griffith that he needed more time to prepare and there might be more discovery, that is, evidence and information related to the case, that the defense needs to look at. Griffith granted a motion from Wyckoff to set another pretrial hearing for December 18th. The charges against Jackson, which also allege he was in possession of two Xanax sedative pills and 8.4 grams of cannabis, result from a traffic stop June 17th on Interstate 72 near Decatur. A Macon County Sheriff's Office drug dog, Chance, had alerted to the presence of drugs in a book bag, according to authorities. A sworn affidavit quoted Jackson as saying he had been directed to take the book bag from Chicago to Decatur. Jackson had been a star player at Eisenhower High School and was a two-time Herald and Review Macon County Player of the Year in 2006 and 2008. He led the school to three straight regional titles and the school's first sectional title in 31 years. He was a four-year starter at Purdue University as point guard, but went undrafted. The next story is, Buffett donates to Sheriff's Office. The Macon County Board approved nearly $100,000 donated by the Howard G. Buffett Foundation to the sheriff's office Thursday, its first meeting since Buffett was appointed sheriff. The donations were $57,455.40 to move the sheriff's office records clerk from part-time to full-time for the remainder of the fiscal year, which goes until December 1st, and for the next 2 years. $21,074 donation to purchase a new 2016 Chevrolet Impala to be used for civil process purposes in the sheriff's office. A $12,000 donation to purchase up to 10 new ballistic vests to be worn by newly hired uniformed sheriff's deputies. $7,966.95 for the purchase of 3 correctional jail medical beds and 2 correctional jail safety restraint chairs. In addition, the board approved in-kind donations from the Buffett Foundation totaling $236,000 for consultants who will assess various aspects of the Macon County Jail, including its policies and mental and medical health protocol, and provide assistance. Buffett, a 62-year-old philanthropist and son of multi-billionaire investor Warren Buffett, was named sheriff September 15th after former Sheriff Thomas Schneider retired, citing stress and health-related reasons. His donations are the latest in tens of millions of dollars in gifts to the Decatur area in recent years. The board also approved the appointment of Laura Zimmerman to fill out the rest of the board term of John Baxter, who died last month. The term will run until next fall. Next we have Heartland to host drone conference, and this story is datelined Normal. Officials hope farmers, business people, and hobbyists will learn something at next month's drone conference at Heartland Community College. Amazon's talking about delivering packages by drones, and then people are afraid of drones and will shoot them down if they're over their property. There's so much information and misinformation out there, said Scott Smigel, an administrator at the college. Our pitch is spend half a day and get a much better background in the drone business. The one-day event will include a keynote speech, 3 rounds of small presentations, and a hands-on drone demonstration November 10th at Heartland's Astroth Community Education Center on the campus in Normal. Public advance registration is $69. The keynote speaker is Sharon Rossmark, an Illinois State University graduate and founder of Women in Drones, a company that advocates for drone usage and publishes stories about women working in the field. She'll speak about drones, disruptions, opportunities, and the future. Other presentations cover topics such as must-have drone apps, drones, ethics, and the law, getting started with drones on your farm, drones and the real estate industry, and drone use in recent weather disasters. Organizations presenting include Challenger Learning Center, Country Financial, Growmark, Prairie Aviation Museum, and State Farm. Heartland's Continuing Education Department, which coordinates programming not intended for degree-seeking students, created the program and developed it with the Bloomington Normal Economic Development Council and McLean County Chamber of Commerce. Chamber members from McLean, Livingston, and Logan counties, educators, and members of groups of 3 or more can register for $59. Students can get in for $29. Registration goes up to $99 on November 1st. It's our first conference, so it's hard to tell, is this going to be gangbusters? But we've got a steady rate of registrations coming in, Spiegel said. We've got room for about 430 attendees. I don't think we'll get to that. Spiegel said the event could become annual, depending how successful it is. It's amazing how fast the technology has changed and what drones' capabilities are already, he said. If they keep evolving like that, it's hard to tell where drones will be at this time next year. Now we have a story out of Springfield headlined, Illinois Inmate Assaults Up 51% This Year. Illinois officials are cutting costs by putting violent prisoners in less secure prisons, a driver behind a 51% increase in inmate assaults over 2 years, a state employee union said Thursday. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Council 31, asserted that Governor Bruce Rauner's campaign to reduce the prison population has meant an 18% drop in maximum security prison populations. At the same time, assaults on corrections officers jumped from 541 in 2015 to a projected 819 this year. AFSCME Executive Director Roberta Lynch, surrounded by correctional officers who had suffered or witnessed attacks, said at a Springfield news conference. Decatur Correctional Center, the only minimum security women's prison in the state, has not seen a significant problem with assaults on the staff, said Anders Lindahl, Public Affairs Director at AFS CME Council 31. The Department of Corrections reports 4 staff assaults there in recent years, 3 in 2015, 1 in 2016, and none this year so far, he said. Is it because prisons with lower security levels have lower staffing levels and cost less to operate, and that far too little attention is paid to the human cost of increasing violence against staff? Lynch asked, noting the recurring pain, the family turmoil, the physical trauma, and even the permanent disability that can occur when staff is subject to violent assaults. Illinois Department of Corrections Director John Baldwin, meeting later with reporters, rejected AFS CME declarations that management doesn't care and dismissed the claims of budget-driven security reclassification. He said the department is changing its classification system for inmates to replace a 30-year-old model, acknowledging that we have a lot of population in the wrong place. Staff said, we need to know more about the offender, and we're trying to get them that information. Staff are the best people to deal with the offenders, Baldwin said. AFSCME counted assaults by calendar year, 541 in 2015 and 819 projected this year, based on year-to-date data. Baldwin said the department counted a 27% increase over fiscal years, 566 in the year that ended June 30, 2015, to 761 in the fiscal year that ended last June 30th. 7 in 10 assaults are perpetrated by mentally ill inmates, Baldwin said. Key to reducing those, he said, is training approved by the National Alliance on Mental Illness, which all department employees have had, in dealing with sometimes uncertain responses and reactions associated with mental illness. Alinea Lewis, an officer who suffered a concussion in an attack that sent half a dozen staff members at the maximum security lockup in Pontiac to the hospital last year, said the inmates responsible have been charged with battery in criminal court, but Corrections Department disciplinary infractions were dismissed. Baldwin denied AFSCME's claim that misbehavior isn't punished, saying the agency's disciplinary system is robust. Officer Cody Dorns from East Moline complained that an improper radio communication system delayed the response to a bloody attack on a guard who was alone on a 100-inmate unit recently. Baldwin said the officer's distress call was heard and that he has sought legislative appropriation for new equipment repeatedly, but has been stymied by the state's budget problems. Now, here are 3 quick calendar items for the weekend on thisweekatheraldreview.com. Today, GLOW Yoga for Cats from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Decatur Area Arts Council. Cost is $20 to $25. Adrian Gurley from the Studio Yoga. Bring a mat and beverages. There'll be a silent auction. Doors open at 6, practice at 7 p.m. Saturday, Christmas in October, 3 p.m. at the Prairieland Abate. Admission $10 or toy of equal value. Proceeds benefit toys for children in need. Bands, food, raffles, silent and live auctions. On Sunday, Clue the Musical at 2 p.m. at the Decatur Civic Center. Tickets are $15. This is a family-friendly, live-action version of the internationally popular board game. We'll take a short break now, and I'll return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review in a moment. Please stay tuned.